all language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue.
We would be honored if you would join us.
How are you feeling? Your latest workups on your condition indicate that all damage has been reversed. Recovery is total. I believe you have been quite fortunate. No further thanks are necessary, Commander, but you are most welcome. It is my function and pleasure as a matter of right to help and heal human beings.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Star Wars From the Back to Tank, the Star Wars Rebels edition, where we discuss, analyze, break down Star Wars Rebels. If this is the first time you're listening to us, you can find all of our shows on demand via iTunes, Stitcher, and also the Rain Man digital app. Just search Star Wars From the Back to Tank in your iOS stores. And for the app, just search Rain Man Digital in your iOS and Google Play stores. Hello, David. How you doing?
Hello. Doing okay.
All right. Are you unsure? Everything's fine now. Everything's good.
Everything's good.
Negative. Situation normal.
How are you?
All right. So, we have a lot to discuss with this episode. If you have missed our first discussion dealing with this story, yes, it wasn't officially a part one and part two, but it probably should have been. We did discuss and break down the occupation, so go back, scroll back, stop now, listen to our discussion on the occupation, because it's definitely a two-parter type of deal here. This week, once again with this episode, the sixth episode of Star Wars Rebels titled The Flight of the Defender, we see the man, the myth, the legend return and come back to flex his muscles on all of us. And that's Dave Filoni. Last episode he directed, and now he has returned to write the continuation of our story back that sees us back at Lothal. And it's very fitting. It was a great decision because when Dave Filoni comes in, this guy walks in like a skinny white guy in a prison. He just walks in and knocks out the biggest motherfucker first. he's all, look out, I'm back.
I'm back.
Because he doesn't come in to do the small shit. This guy returns to do the stuff that matters. And I'm not saying all the other episodes are not exciting, because they are. Star Wars Rebels is a show.
It is.
It's a great installment of Star Wars. Some of the best Star Wars stories of all time, easily. However, there's a noticeable shift in story as soon as Filoni is involved. There's so much depth.
You can see it in even the minor characters.
Yes. There's so much wonderment. There's excitement. It's like watching Star Wars, the original trilogy. It feels right.
Yes.
It feels good. And that's what Dave Filoni brings to the scene every time he's directly involved with an episode. Now, this week's episode, the synopsis for it, I keep saying this week's because I'm getting confused with how we broke this up, but Flight of the Defender, the synopsis is Ezra and Sabine steal an Imperial prototype TIE fighter, but must rely on some unexpected help to escape from Thrawn. Now, this was a question I was wondering for quite some time. We're now six episodes into the first season, and we haven't really seen Thrawn. We've heard about him. We know he's out there doing his thing, and we even saw a holographic projection of him at one point, but we never actually have seen Thrawn yet. And my God, as soon as he enters, I mean, the way he walks with his hands behind his back, the entire base is being exploded and blowing up, and he just stands there, doesn't flinch. There's a TIE defender flying at him, and he pulls out his blaster and just starts firing.
It's very if people have seen the movie Patton, it's very Patton-esque.
Yeah.
Like, literally, my favorite scene, and the funniest part by far with Thrawn, he doesn't say much.
Yeah.
All his, everything he says is through his actions. I love that scene where basically everyone is scattering around them. Stormtroopers are screaming and running in fear. And Thrawn just standing there, TIE Defender coming at him, pulls out his blaster, just starts randomly shooting at it.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's a great way to display how in control he is. He's very cool and calm, and he very rarely breaks that calm, except last year when his subordinate insulted alien species.
Yes.
That's the only time.
Only time.
He broke his cool, calm exterior. And if you know the history of Thrawn, that's something that's he's very sensitive to.
He's
it.
Very sensitive
and when I say
it.
Sensitive, he doesn't cry about it, but it gets under his skin.
But the thing I also liked about Thrawn, I liked how Filoni wrote everyone's reactions and feelings and thoughts on Thrawn when he shows up.
Yeah.
Like, I really like the fact that Ezra is afraid of Thrawn.
Yeah.
Like,
he obliterated their attack last year.
When Ezra before this is all calm and he's kind of cocky at first. And then when he sees Thrawn, he immediately tells Sabine, it's the worst case scenario. I want to leave now.
Yeah.
Because Thrawn just showed up.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's so good on so many levels, and it brings about a lot of questions pertaining to Thrawn, like what will become of him? Will we see his demise this year in order for Rebels to feel? Well, they've done something kind of interesting, and Filoni just discussed this in an interview recently where they talk about Thrawn and how he's the only villain they've kind of pulled over from a previous season. In the first season, you had the Inquisitor story kind of come to an end.
Yes.
Then in the second season, you had Darth Vader kind of take the lead, and then they closed him out and his purpose for Rebels and how he even manages to get involved with their story. And then they expertly found a way to kind of take him out. Then third season, we're reintroduced to a character that was retconned, a beloved character, a beloved villain, Thrawn. Brought him back in the third season, utilized him, built him up, used some of the core elements that made him who he was in the old EU that got retconned, and made a new version of this character that stays true to who Thrawn was. And Thrawn was a character that every Star Wars nutcase gravitated to.
Yes.
And to see what they've done with him for the past year and now bleeding back into the fourth season, it's just been such a win for Star Wars fans to see this character have his due on screen. Now, live action would be even better, but we'll be patient. We'll be patient. There's plenty of Star Wars stories to tell to see that. However, what they're doing with the Rebels, it's been so great to see him utilize. But this brings up the question, Dave. What's going to happen to Thrawn? Because they tied him so intricately now into the plot of Star Wars Rebels, into the very core of the Rebel story. He has been created almost now. I should say, let me backtrack on those words. He's been formed into not the big bad of the season, not a villain, but something very different. He has been formed into the arch nemesis of the Rebels crew.
Of the Rebels crew, yeah.
That's a very different literary writing device. The arch nemesis, there's certain rules that go with that. And in order for the Rebels to have a satisfying ending, the arch nemesis has to be defeated. This isn't a villain like Darth Vader, where you can find a convenient way to tuck him away. He has to fail miserably, either through death or through his standing amongst the Empire.
Yeah, because like Thrawn is so good at this point, and they've written him to be such a strong character now everyone's starting to question, okay, Thrawn's this badass general of the Empire. Where the hell is he
right.
throughout everything?
Exactly.
And you mean to tell me that he's not at the Battle of Endor when the most important piece of the Empire needs to be protected? They don't call Thrawn.
Exactly. So something, his standing, his prowess amongst the Imperials, it has to be diminished. And I don't know how that's going to work for his character. Is he going to be defeated through death?
This goes back to like saying I really do not like.
This is the horrible
killing characters.
Yeah,
I hate killing characters, yeah.
Especially Star Wars characters you like. This is the hard thing about these ongoing stories is you're constantly, you know, yay, they're introduced. Oh, shit. Are they going to die?
Like Darth Vader, I thought it was a genius way of writing him out.
Oh, yeah.
He fought Ahsoka.
It makes sense.
And both of them were damaged in the end.
Right.
So Vader's got to go heal. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Maul, perfect way of ending because he has to actually die by his own ego and by the hands of Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's his destiny.
Yeah.
Thrawn, it's like, oh, man, I don't know what his destiny is because, like, you know that basically he's a villain. But he's the type of villain that you basically go, in a lot of ways, you, like, go, if he were to actually be smart, he could overthrow the Empire himself.
Yeah. You know, I know in the Thrawn book, they give him these types of motivations that are actually pretty damn interesting and very enlightening.
And the thing is,
but
in the book, they pose him as a figure that the Emperor himself holds very highly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, if the Emperor holds Thrawn really highly in the book, what happens to him then?
Yeah. And even the reason why Thrawn becomes affiliated, someone as honorable as Thrawn, the reasons why he becomes affiliated with the Empire also is made and brought to light as well in the book.
Yeah.
The decision he makes to join them is a very distinct reason.
Yes.
And I'm not going to get into that because I don't want to spoil the book for people that haven't read it. But
that's for probably our book discussion.
But you got to remember, everything's connected. Everything matters to tell one big story. So is Thrawn's story really going to come to an end with Star Wars Rebels? You know what? We will wait. I'm not going to speculate because we're way too early right now. We're only 6 episodes in. This is the first time we actually seen Thrawn this season for real. So I'm going to wait to speculate. However, that is a question that we're going to put a pin in and go back to it as we move through this season.
The one thing I wanted to ask you about this episode is, okay, tying to Thrawn and the episode, do you actually feel that the TIE Defender, the thing that basically everyone focused in on this, which is that prototype Defender,
mm-hmm.
is that worthy of Thrawn's attention, though? Because it's a great fighter, but
I don't think it's just that. I think there's more to the reason why he's there. There's more reasons as to what he's doing. So there's a lot going on that we don't know yet.
It was very, for me, it brought up the question is kind of like, okay, this TIE Defender, I understand it's important, but this theme's almost below Thrawn.
But also you got to remember, I don't think it's just this TIE Defender that he may be overseeing. He's also on Lothal for a reason. Lothal is where this band, is the reason, is where the Phoenix Squadron made their biggest mark. It's where Ezra's from. It's where all of this started happening. And he has been given the task to go after the Phoenix Squadron. Now things have changed. The Phoenix Squadron has merged with the bigger Rebel Alliance. But he's still overseeing Lothal because I think his end game, his task is to capture those rebels. So for him to be on Lothal or close by, I think that makes sense to what we've seen so far. I think one of the most interesting takeaways when it comes to development of Thrawn and to even double down on what I just said about his task is the Phoenix Squadron. Look how well he knows the rebels. The fact that he's standing there watching, okay, as everything unfolds in front of him, he doesn't budge. He's just watching, which is what wise people do, right? They watch before they act. They observe before they take action. He's watching how everything's happening. When Ezra's fighting and he flies and flops down, all he does is say, interesting.
Yeah, that was one of the funniest things.
I laughed out loud, man. I don't do that during Star Wars Rebels very hardly ever. And the fact that I rewound it and laughed out loud because it's just, interesting. It's so dismissive, but also he's observing. He's learning.
Yeah.
So then he uses that same skill set. We see him utilizing that from far away. He's nowhere on the battlefield anymore. The defender has flown off, and based on the actions that the defender is making, he knows that A, Hera's not in on board, because if she was on board, she would have destroyed the TIE fighters immediately.
Yes.
And then a few seconds later, he says, oh, it's the Mandalorian, because she was able to hijack the system. So the fact that we don't, in a show like this where you're dealing with 25 minutes and take into account that Dave Filoni is the writer of this episode, you don't have an actor just say bullshit like that for no reason. There's a reason. They want the audience to understand that he knows everything about these characters. He knows them maybe even better than they know themselves.
Which will be interesting if Thrawn at the end of this ties into Ezra's, because in our past episode we talked about Ezra making his decision. I wonder if Thrawn plays into that, because Thrawn, you're right, Thrawn knows this crew, and you could say he knows this crew better than they know themselves.
So, yeah, and that could also justify the reason why he's on Lothal right now.
Yeah,
because they already knew that Ryder was sending out a message. So if he understands these characters as well as he does, would he not suspect that they would in fact return to Lothal to offer their aid?
That's a good point.
So these things make sense. Absolutely,
and
does make sense.
And that's why, dude, like whenever Thrawn shows up in all of his episodes, I'm hanging by the edge of my seat to see what he says.
Well, especially now that we know that the writers of Star Wars Rebels are willing to make people lose.
Yes.
Which is something that we're not used to seeing in Star Wars. Good always wins.
Yeah.
But look how devastating the third season ended.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was bleak. I mean, yes, we could say the same thing for the second season, but it was Ahsoka's death or non-death, whatever side of that argument you land on. But my point is that there was a sense of win for our characters by the end, right?
Yeah.
The third season ended very bleak. It ended with the annihilation of a rebel squadron and the death of a few characters that we've seen through the last three seasons. So all things are leading to one road.
Yes.
And this leads us to our next point of discussion, Dave, which is the heart of this story. The Thrawn is the catalyst that makes all of this fan out and branch out to our various additional questions and makes us wonder what's going to happen with our heroes. Okay, now on our last episode, The Occupation, I discussed two questions that are posed, a fork in the road.
Yes.
The first one was presented in The Occupation. The first decision, the left, let's say, the left side of the path, was a question that was being posed rather overtly. It was in your face. Once again, Saw Gerrera was brought up. Ezra's disgruntlement with leadership under Mon Mothma. Not disrespect, just wondering if there's another course of action, that we're not doing enough. And you brought up a point where he said, he told Mon Mothma, hey, I'm going to Lothal and I'm staying. I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
That's where I belong. So he's making that decision right there that he belongs there. And that question was posed of Saw Gerrera. Is Saw Gerrera's tactics the choice? Is that the right decision? Is that the right choice? Now we are presented with another, the right side, okay? The other decision. The other path on that fork in the road. And that's the metaphysical, the force, the very core of what makes the Star Wars universe operate. And the fact that they're bringing in these elements into Star Wars Rebels, once again, is a testament to Filoni's understanding of the force. And I feel like Ezra is being presented a metaphysical path as well, something pertaining to the force. And something that they're not just pulling out of their ass. Filoni and the crew didn't just say, yeah, this seems right. Yeah, let's pull this out of our ass. This worked. This is something. This other question, this other potential path for Ezra has been set before him since the very beginning of Star Wars Rebels. And number one, let's remember his connection he has with life, with creatures.
Yes.
That has been stated continually throughout Star Wars Rebels. He has... Every Jedi has their strengths, and they all have their thing that they do. Some are great swordsmen. Some are, you know, great diplomats. Some are fantastic with mind manipulation. Then you have ones that can do all types of other things. Then you have Ezra, who has a direct link with life, which is the very definition of the Force. If you remember way back when, in the original trilogy, when Obi-Wan explains what the Force is to Luke. It's everywhere. It's in everything. It binds the universe together. So when you're presented with a very metaphysical question or path, like becoming one with the Force, which is my theory, okay? I don't think Ezra's ending is going to be as bleak as everyone thinks. Number one, Dave, this path that I believe Ezra will take involves becoming one with Lothal. It sounds crazy. But once I presented all this evidence to you, it should make sense.
Yeah.
I don't think Ezra's end is going to be what we all think. I think he's, in order to win and be tucked away, you're going to see a Jedi make a decision to become one with Lothal. How that's going to happen, I don't know. But we already know he has that deep connection with life forms, right? With creatures.
Yes, because he could talk to the cats and the Lothal cats, right? The little cats,
and also the dark side creature when they fought the Inquisitor. It goes
and
past
the whales
and the whales, exactly,
the gigantic whales.
So it goes past. It's not just Lothal, but because Lothal is his heart, it's his home, his destiny, his path leads back to Lothal and his deep connection he has with that planet. As we saw this week, the fact that a Lothal wolf that was thought to be extinct for 100 years appeared to him and him alone, whether it be some type of force spirit or an actual wolf, that once again, we have to remember, all life is connected to the force. Whatever it ends up being, they're laying down those breadcrumbs for Ezra's ending.
Yes.
And how his story ends. And it's going to be connected to the planet in a very spiritual sense.
Yeah, and We discussed this off the air and stuff like that. For me, when I look at like where Ezra's heading, especially with this episode now where they introduced the Lothal wolf.
I loved it, too.
That was awesome.
It was so good. Dude, it wasn't Ahsoka, though. It wasn't
Ahsoka. Yeah. Remember, too bad.
Remember that fan theory?
That fan theory. That
I believe the white wolf is Ahsoka. Why? Because, I don't know.
Because it has a similar head shape.
Really? The worst fan
theory
ever.
That's the worst fan theory ever. No, there's been two worse.
No, that was a bad one too.
But like, we've seen this before. And
watch
yeah.
It be Ahsoka now.
I would facepalm so badly. But like, we've seen this before in a minor sense with Kanan, when Kanan was on the other planet with the first Rebel base.
Yeah,
and he runs into Bendu.
Yep.
He's the only one that can see the Bendu.
Chopper base, it was called.
Or Chopper base.
Yeah.
And he was the only one to see Bendu on that planet. And we saw that basically, that was a moment for Kanan where his character became fully developed. And you could say that basically that's where Kanan's, I guess you could say his story ended at that point. Because where do you take Kanan from there?
It did feel like he hit
the wall.
I don't want to say he hit a wall like there's no more room for growth, but I think his path as a Jedi definitely ended there. Like it felt like the only thing left is to make sure Ezra ends up on the right path.
And that, I had the similar sense, and we're going to probably – when you brought it up, when you bring up this idea that he'll become part of the planet for Lothal because that's his heart.
Yeah.
That, for me, would actually fit where they're going because it's – we saw it with Kanan in a minor sense.
Mm-hmm.
For Ezra, it has to be grander. It has to be more metaphysical. It has to be more spiritual. And I think the idea that he somehow taps into the planet that he's – in the first episode – the episode before this in the occupation, he sees that Lothal is dying.
Well, and let's not forget his vision. So he is connected emotionally and spiritually to that planet.
To that planet. So it would make sense that basically in some way he has to cause some kind of healing for Lothal. The planet itself. Not just the people, but the planet.
Yeah. It's – and you know what? If they were to do something like this – and again, I'm going to go ahead and stick to my guns and say, yes, this is indeed what they're doing – it just – it helps with the grand story in a lot of ways. And when I mean the grand story – and when I say the grand story, I'm meaning the bigger picture of Star Wars.
Yeah.
How do you tell a story that's epic in scope, but it doesn't have any unnecessary ramifications on the bigger picture? Well, you tie it to our lead character, Ezra, in a very intimate way where it's epic for him – but it doesn't have massive ramifications into the bigger story.
Into the bigger
you
story.
You tie it back into Lothal. The story has always been about Lothal. It's always been about Ezra's destiny. And if they tie Ezra's destiny into his planet and into the rescue of his planet because his planet is being killed and it's dying, that would make sense on so many levels. It would make it a very intimate and personal story, and it wouldn't interfere with the bigger story of Star Wars.
And if you think about it, to give your theory some backbone production wise, if you look at Filoni's writing, especially since Clone Wars, when he touches on the Force, when he tells what I call Filoni's Force stories, he always goes for like these really metaphysical stories. The three Force users, the father, the son, and the sister.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And also the Force planet that Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka go to. That planet was made out of Force energy. Yoda's journey, going to the planet and becoming one with the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Very metaphysical, very grand. About basically extending your life essence into something that maybe you don't believe is alive, but it is.
Yeah.
So I think I like your idea, I like your theory. I'll be the first person to that since this is you're sharing this theory for the first time, I'll be the first person to agree with you. I think it works.
Yeah, it does. It really does work, and it makes sense. And also, it tackles a canon issue as well when Yoda tells Luke that when I die, the last of the Jedi you'll be. And instead of splitting hairs and saying, well, Ezra's not really a Jedi, he didn't go through the Jedi training, well, Kanan's not really a Jedi because he never finished and he was a Padawan when his master died, rather than splitting hairs like that, it's better if we remove them from the table in a way that makes sense to how they were introduced and their importance within the Star Wars story. And by doing something like that, not necessarily defeat and death, but triumph in extended life as a different type of being. He's not going to transcend into the light. I mean, that's silly. But if he somehow were to transcend in a metaphysical sense and become one with the life of Lothal, not only does it work from based on what we know of Star Wars mysticism that is in fact canon, but it also gives Ezra his due.
Yes.
By him finally allowing to save his planet and at the same time conveniently tucks him away permanently to where it makes sense and doesn't disrupt what we know of Star Wars canon as of now.
Now here's the question I have for you though. Okay, if this is how Ezra's story ends and basically, something has to lead up to Ezra. Does this solidify the fact that Kanan has to die?
Kanan's going to die.
Because I honestly think the only thing that's going to be the catalyst for Ezra to complete his journey and story is honestly something has to happen to Kanan.
Kanan will die
in front of him.
Yeah, Kanan will die to make sure Ezra has the ending he needs. It's about Ezra. So Kanan will die. No doubt.
No doubt.
I mean, why are they laying, yes, this relationship they're building back up with Sabine or with
Hera?
With Hera. They're building it up as a reminder and also to make it even more heart-wrenching when he has to leave.
Dude, that'll make it even worse because I know that they're basically trying to push the fact that Hera is, quote unquote, the only one of the few survivors of Star Wars Rebels. But that makes Hera's story so tragic if the man she loves dies.
Yeah, but if she can witness the rise of the Rebel Alliance and the fall of the Empire, then her story has a complete arc, which, as we know, with that article that came out where what was it? Forces of Destiny.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to get into it too much.
Yeah, we don't want to get into too much.
There's an article that was released by the Nerdist that at least one Star Wars Rebels character survives until Return of the Jedi.
And it turns out that basically Hera actually is on the Battle of Endor.
Yeah. And we know this due to the by way of the other cartoon Filoni's working on, those shortened serialized animations called Star Wars Forces of Destiny. I don't really want to get into it, but we kind of understood that she survived already because of the Rogue One Easter eggs. So we've got kind of, I guess, visual confirmation through
that she
survived. So knowing that she does get to see all of this, we're not going to see that obviously in Rebels, unless they flash forward for her ending, which would be kind of odd. But
although the way they portrayed the trailer would make sense, because remember the trailer, the narrator is Hera, and Hera is basically talking about how she witnessed this story of her crew.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not as certain of Hera's end as I am about Ezra. I think Ezra and Kanan, I'm pretty certain about how it's going to end for them. Sabine, I have a feeling she will end up back in Mandalore. Zeb probably will die. The characters that you can't explain away, I think, are going to end up dead. And as long as they have complete stories that feel real and feel legit and their character arcs feel completed, I'm okay with them dying.
And think about this, dude. We're already in, like, what, episode 6? This was the Fly of the Defender was episode 6.
Yeah, we're halfway through
Through.
Yeah.
And it's ramping up. So I'm like going, oh my God, when are they going to close off characters? Because they only got about like probably 6 episodes left.
Yep.
So.
Yep. All right, Dave. Well, we need to conclude this week's discussion. I did mention on our last discussion, the occupation, about the connection with Ezra and Sabine. And I want to talk about it briefly before we wrap it up.
Yeah.
This is another, I guess, part of these last couple episodes that felt like everything's ending. It's the fact that for the past 4 years, we've seen Ezra kind of chase after Sabine, and she's always been very dismissive of him. And you could see that there's finally a connection between the two of them. And I'm not saying there's a romantic connection. It's not probably what Ezra wants, because, you know, guys always want some action. But it's a form of respect. And it looked like it took 3 years to get there. But Sabine actually truly cares about Ezra now. You can see her reactions to his reactions when he finds out about Lothal. The focus is always on her.
Yes.
And her reactions to how Ezra is reacting to the bad news and to the destruction of his planet. And I find that an interesting choice in direction, because she has been very dismissive, almost like an older sister does a little brother. It's just like, eh, who are you?
Who are you?
And it's changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
This season. And I like that. I feel like that also, little subtle things like that help our characters feel complete. The fact that he was finally able to win over someone's respect and over the course of 4 years, it feels also a nice way to put, you know, the cherry on top of of these characters.
And dude, it just goes back to basically Filoni knowing his characters and understanding how his characters should feel. And I really enjoyed these past few episodes just because you really get a sense of like the relationships between every character. It's just not, you know, like the main character and one person. You see like all these characters down to the minor characters really have relationships with each other.
Yeah, it works.
It works.
It all works together. All right, Dave, final thoughts and grade.
Final thoughts and grade on this one. This one was really good. I mean, again, it's an A for me for Filoni. He has not let me down yet. So like, knock on wood.
He hasn't landed you yet.
He hasn't landed me. So I would give this an A. I really enjoyed the elements of showing a lot of the character depth down to Thrawn. I think Thrawn was my favorite parts in all this. And Thrawn had very little dialogue. And I watched this like three times. I'm like going, this is a really great example of how to write a character without the use of dialogue.
Yeah, you don't need exposition to build a character.
Yeah, it's how a character looks and how a character reacts or stands there. And I think Filoni knows his characters down to a T. I'm really happy to see his story coming full circle. And I'm really psyched for the next six episodes because I'm like going, they're going to start closing it out now because we all know that this is the same year as Rogue One in Star Wars timeline. So at the end of the season, that's it. The Rebels crew can't go any further than this. So really psyched, kind of sad in a little way because I could see the ending in the horizon, but I'm very intrigued where Filoni can take this.
All right. So I give this episode an A+. And the reason why is because Dave Filoni can just do no wrong when it comes to writing. And when you give him that pen or that keyboard and you say, hey, write this fucking story, he does it. And to see all the roads coming together in such a way where everything he started way back in season one is still matters when it comes to the core foundations of our characters. And we see them all coming to a head. The connection with Lothal since season one matters even now.
More than ever.
More than ever. And because of that, you can see, and I'm not talking about because it's bad writing, you can see what's happening. I don't think most people can see it. I think because we analyze things, we can definitely see where this is going. And the tie-in, the Force and Ezra back into what he is all about, the metaphysical aspect or the mysticism of the Force, bringing that together and connecting it with Ezra, which is something we saw way back in season one. It is a part of Ezra, his deep connection with life. It matters to who he is and his outcome and who he becomes. And to see all these things happen, it's just so great. And it's so cohesive. It feels right. So A+ episode. I'm hoping Dave Filoni returns for more, if not the rest of the season. So that concludes this week's discussion on Star Wars Rebels. Flight of the Defender. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you ever miss any part of this broadcast, please catch us on demand via iTunes and Stitcher. Just search Star Wars From the Back to Tank. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, David.
Thank you. May the Force be with all of us.
Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1, and if you've missed any portion of the show, you can always head over to FromTheBackToTank.com and listen to the show at your leisure. We're also on Stitcher, Smart Radio, Stitcher.com, search, Bacta, and add us to your favorites. Thank you, and listen responsibly. And may the Force be with you. And long live. Thank you for listening to From the Back to Tank. And From the Back to Tank is executive produced by Michael Flores and Dustin Lucas, hosted by Michael Flores, David Zabal. You can find out more about our show by going to www.fromthebacktotank.com. You can also find us on Twitter at FromBackToTank, as well as Facebook, facebook.com/FromTheBackToTank.